Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Neon Spark by Al Kaline, narrated by Gildert Jackson. Cultural Adjustment. Neon screamed at me from every direction. People hurried past, intent on unknown destinations, phones glued to their ears like extensions of themselves. The city stank, the traffic so congested I could see no point whatsoever in travelling by anything but foot or the subway. Billboards and blaring speakers, hallmarks of the metropolis and a thoroughly consumerist society, threatened to overwhelm me as I stood in the centre of the road and spun slowly in a circle trying to take it all in. Last time I visited, it had been a very different place indeed, but that was long before the invention of almost every piece of technology that surrounded me. Nobody stopped and stared at the tall Gaijin with bleached hair fading to brown, wearing a 1960s original suit with a nice clean red shirt and a pair of polished winkle pickers. I was, as always, the no man, the person you forget as soon as you passed. The invisible man, shrouded in a magical aura that made me entirely forgettable. Salarymen, many looking close to karoshi, death from overwork, and shoppers jostled me from four directions, bowing apologies, then forgetting me as they hurried on past, already immersed again in their digital life of stressing over being late back to work after a rushed and unsatisfactory lunch. I felt like the giant that had killed me, at least a head taller than most of those that passed, conscious of my nose, almost as big as a goblin's compared to the locals, and for some strange reason all the pigeons were giving me a very wide berth. Maybe they could feel the magic, the pent-up anger and need for revenge that drove me through the overcrowded city in search of answers. I stared suspiciously at one bird in particular as it cocked its head from side to side, studying me. Then it shimmered, and I saw what it really was, a tengu, safe behind its own magical veil in the presence of regulars, a true hidden creature. The streets teemed with endless hidden that we don't encounter back home. The sheer volume of myths, legends, and folk tales meaning this small island had more hidden per square foot than any other country in the world. I ignored the pigeon because it was freaking me out, and continued about my business. After 3 days, a lot of rest, and a hell of a lot of food, I was finally feeling up to the hunt, and was in no mood for the crowds. How could people live like this? I'd go mad in days. Maybe already had. Wading through the press of bodies to the stores, having to resist blasting away with the dark arts just so I could get some personal space, I turned and entered a small dark interior through a door that screamed my presence with a ridiculously loud buzzer. The person I wanted to talk to was at the back of the cramped room, head down, focused on opening a box containing more of the junk that cluttered the shelves and floor. The place was full of esoteric nonsense, there for tourists and those that didn't understand the score about magic and had never even heard of the hidden. On every available surface were jars of fake potions, dream catchers, staffs and rods and amulets and weird cultural items I had no clue about, only knowing they were lies and would never allow the bearer to harness the empty. The owner, dirty and as scruffy as the store, noticed me for the first time. He was a short man wearing a vest, with a pot belly and hair slick with some product that made him look as though he'd stuck his head in a vat of lard and thought it would do. His pale skin was as greasy as his hair, and as we made eye contact, beads of sweat popped onto his brow as if his skin was bubbling up and overheating. I walked over, casual and calm, holding up a hand as he began speaking in Japanese, saying he didn't understand English. "Spare me, Osama. Try that crap with me and I'll blast you through your goddamn window and let the pigeons eat you. Understand?"
"Yes, sorry, Spark-san. English. I will speak English."
"Good. Now, I want some information. I know you have something that can help me find Kimiko, and I can tell you right now that I'm in no mood for any of your bullshit." Osama held up his hands in protest.
"Spark-san, is this how you say hello to me after so many years?"
The last time we met, you were trying to steal Ricker's books, and we both remember how that went. Osama went even paler, fumbled in a pocket, then mopped his brow and neck with a stained and crusty white handkerchief. He dabbed under his arms with it, and I tried not to gag as the stink hit me. I was just reading them. I wasn't trying to steal any books. He rubbed at his left side, where I'd blasted him good before sucking his magic out of him as he screamed and generally overreacted, while I took him from low-level wizard back to being just a regular human being. That was 30 years ago, and ever since he'd been unable to restore the magic I had taken. It was mine, became a part of me, a wisp remaining, even though most of it returned to the empty, and it seemed that starting over and trying to get back what was taken had not gone well for him. He got off lightly. "Where is she, Osama? I will take what pathetic amounts of magic you have managed to gather over all these years and ensure you never even remember there's a hidden world, unless you tell me right now where the hell she is."
I can't, he whimpered.
"You can and you will."
"You don't understand. Nobody goes against Kimiko Kochi. This isn't your country. You have no idea what it is like here now, and you have no clue who she is now, what she can do."
"And you don't know what I can do now, Osama. Whatever she is, whatever her position, however powerful she is, I have come for her. You better start talking."
Everyone knew I was in town and was after her. No point keeping quiet, but she was a ghost, more myth than the strange creatures that lived all around. Her name was spoken in whispers and with reverence and utter abject fear. She controlled them, ruled them, and they obeyed.
"Tell me!" I shouted. Before I could get to him, he'd pulled an evil-looking blade from behind the counter, and with a mumbled prayer, he stabbed himself in the guts, then ripped from left to right. This was the third seppuku I'd witnessed that day. It seemed people would go to any lengths to avoid giving me information concerning the whereabouts of the woman I sought. My trip was not going as well as it might have. Welcome to Tokyo, home to 13 million people in the city itself, 39 million in the greater Tokyo area, and one infamous Japanese vampire by the name of Kimiko Kochi, legendary raven-haired beauty that had murdered my parents 100 years ago on the other side of the world and was soon to be very, very dead. I just had to find her. The locals weren't talking, but I had a backup plan.
No rest for the dead. The buzzer brought my tinnitus back like an imp shouting in my ear as I turned at the sound of the door opening.
This place is nuts! Where are all these people going? What are they all doing? It stinks out there. Have you seen that half of them are wearing masks? Do you think the air is that poisonous?
Dancer paused his stream of questions to put a hand over his mouth as if it would stop the car fumes from penetrating into his lungs.
You'll get used to it. Anyway, that's the least of your worries. It's the contagious swine flu that's the real danger.
That's it. I'm out of here. Next fly home for me.
I held up my hands. I'm joking. Don't be such a baby. Actually, I wasn't, but there was no point telling him that.
I want to go home. Everything gets served with a radish here, and those chopsticks are definitely just a joke they play on foreigners. Plus, I'm boiling in my suit. Aren't you hot?
I stepped out from behind the counter where I'd propped up Osama after having pushed his guts back in and wrapped his belly tight in a length of cloth to stop his lower intestine falling back out. It was not a good way to die, and I'd had to finish him off to stop the suffering. I may be cold-blooded at times, but I'm not heartless.
Not really, just use a touch of magic to keep yourself cool.
Dancer grimaced.
That just seems disrespectful. It's not a proper use of the arts, Spark.
I shrugged. As far as I was concerned, it was better than having sweaty armpits or walking around in casual clothes. I shuddered at the thought. Dancer scowled at the junk in the store and came over to where I was standing. He took one look at the guy and said,
"Not another one. What is with these people and the damn suicide?
Watch it, Dancer. You're starting to sound a little xenophobic there. They're Japanese, not these people.
You know what I meant. Damn, why did you have to drag me all this way, like I haven't got enough on my plate at home? Everything is in chaos. You do know that, right?
I know, but it will all still be there when we return. The mess isn't going anywhere. Let the council sort out their own troubles. They owe me. They owe all of us after what happened. I didn't want to think about it. Couldn't. I'd been betrayed in the worst possible way, my whole world crumbling around me. The one person I thought I could trust above all others, and he'd been nothing but a goddamn liar and a fraud, a user and an abuser, instrumental in having my parents killed just so he'd have a tough dark magic enforcer to meld to his own idea of what I should be. My life felt like a lie. I didn't know who I was anymore, and it hurt so damn much I wanted to break down and cry, or sleep and never wake up. I was also so tired I was functioning on another plane of existence. The jet lag was bad enough, and I was still on British time, but that was as nothing to the utter ache in my heart and my bones from all that had gone down over the few days before we headed to the other side of the world. Thinking I had nothing to lose, I'd overstepped the line, forced magic use that was more than I could handle, tried to do the impossible and kill an immortal giant, resulting in nothing but me taking a step back from what I'd gained, using magic without the terrible come-down afterward. Now I was back right where I'd been for so long, with it hurting like the worst kind of sickness you could imagine. Perversely, it made me feel better, that knowledge, that agony. Maybe I was on a downer, I had every right to be, but I felt it was what I deserved. A punishment of sorts for the things I'd done in my past, for all the hurt I'd caused others, but mainly because I knew I was empty of most feeling. Revenge, the overriding emotion. I was all consumed by my need for it, even though I'd had enough killing to last several lifetimes. The man I'd thought of as a friend and father figure, not just my boss, had betrayed me utterly. All of us. He was a liar and a cheat and the most selfish of men. I killed him and watched him die. And if I could, I'd do it again, a million times over, and make him relive it. This wasn't good. Even from beyond the grave, Ricker had a hold on me, was affecting me and driving me toward a resolution I felt could result in my destruction. Part of me didn't care. I just wanted it to all be over, for this weight that hung around my neck to be lifted. The sense of loss and betrayal made a year in prison feel like nothing but a vacation, and now I was in another kind of prison, trapped in my own mind with terrible emotions threatening to warp my soul and the humanity I had left, turning me into something colder than the most ancient of vampires. Dancer had heard soon enough about what had happened, and I'd explained it all in person before leaving for Tokyo. He didn't believe me at first, but he came around, feeling just as duped as I did, as Grandma did, and I saw a side of him I'd never witnessed before. He cried for the loss of his boss, something I couldn't do. I was too empty inside, too exhausted from fighting and the theft of magic that had gone too far. I don't even know how I made it onto the plane, even with Kate and Grandma's help, but somehow I did, and the next thing I knew I was holed up in a nice hotel trying to stop going insane with thoughts whirling around my head a mile a minute and sickness taking me over. The come-down was terrible and total, but it still wasn't like it had been before. Maybe it had something to do with having been gifted magic from a giant. That kind of thing can have any number of effects on you, and I was in no doubt I'd uncover more as time went on. Back to business. Well, can you do it? I nodded at the corpse.
Of course, he only just died. Good thing you had me waiting, although I don't know why we need all this cloak and dagger stuff.
Because there are spies everywhere, and it's best if we keep things low-key. Dancer actually smiled at my words, or tried to. He just looked constipated as usual.
Black Spark, Dark Magic Enforcer, keeping it low-key.
Yeah, right.
Whatever, just bring him back. I haven't finished with him yet.
I stood back as Dancer bent to Asama. The air became thick, like a magical soup, as the barrier between this world and the next split asunder with a dramatic crack I'm sure Dancer did just for effect. Faces of the damned and the tormented pushed at the weakened barrier between worlds, trying to force their way through as Dancer focused his mind and strong magic on calling back to his body the spirit of Asama, giving him a second, albeit brief, chance at life. The body shot upright, and Asama gasped desperately as air inflated his lungs and his protruding belly strained against the bindings. He clutched at the blood and gore-stained cloth, confused and fearful, not understanding what had happened. He looked up at us and said,
"No, no, no, let me be. Send me back. I'd rather go there, to that hell I just saw, than betray Kimiko. You don't know what she can do."
"Dude, you're dead. There's nothing she can do now."
"Hell, how could he still be scared? He was reanimated by a necromancer, so nothing could hurt him now. He was already gone."
"Spark, son, you don't understand what you're trying to do. Leave me be. Let me die for the last time."
"No, you will tell me what I want to know. You will tell me now."
Asama trembled and his limbs flailed violently. Then great spasms took hold and he fell sideways, foaming at the mouth as his eyes rolled back in his head until they were nothing but whites.
"You are not welcome,"
came a voice emanating from Asama's mouth, but it wasn't him. It was a woman's. It was soft and gently spoken, shy and utterly in control.
"Leave while you still can. I have no quarrel with you, but if you cross me, you will pay."
I got up close to his face, not knowing if she could see through his milky eyes. "I'm coming for you, Kimiko. Do you hear me? You are mine." The head snapped forward.
"So be it, Black Spark. I have long known this time would come, but I had expected someone more powerful. You are still just a boy. I'll show you what this boy is capable of, and I shall show you what I am capable of."
Dancer slipped onto his backside, face ashen. He couldn't hold on to the magic any longer, the interference too great for his necromancy skills.
"Shit, she is seriously powerful, Spark. She just spoke to us through a corpse. That's not good."
"Nope, it's not." This was going to be harder than I had thought. And then the buzzer went on the door. We turned to see a mass of Japanese zombies shuffling in. I missed Cardiff. Japanese Zombie Mayhem.
"I want to go home!"
yelled Dancer, scrambling from the floor, looking almost green from exertion and the theft of his hold over the corpse.
"Maybe give it 10 minutes while we deal with the zombies, eh?"
My ears rang, making my head swim, while the damn buzzer repeatedly sounded as more and more Japanese undead poured into the cramped store. My eyes snapped hard to black, and silver sparks of energy pierced my eyeballs, sending sharp pains into my skull like a case of acupuncture gone horribly wrong. The stink of putrid flesh, so rotten it was like a ghoul's wet dream, cloyed the air and made us both gag as the moans of the zombies grew louder. It was weird, but all I could think of was the fact they were moaning in a foreign language. You'd think it would sound the same, but it didn't. Forced from behind by the pressure of undead flesh, the lead zombie stumbled and smacked into the counter, dead eyes greedy with the anticipation of a fresh meal of some nice foreign brains. A real treat. I slammed my hand onto the counter, fingers stinging against the dirty wood as a ripple of black magic crashed into the living dead, hurling them back against the press of the throng. But the space was so rammed they remained standing. There was nowhere for them to go.
Again I blasted, two-handed this time, pressure increasing and more violent as I forced my will into the magic in a specific way, shards of impotent fury slicing at soft, gangrenous flesh that melted under the onslaught or caused bits to drop to the dirty concrete floor.
These were no well-preserved undead, full of the special solution that stops them rotting and extends their undead lives. They were well past their best, little more than sloppy flesh held together by the zombie virus, ancient ex-humans way beyond being aware of what they were or had once been. They were walking hunger, nothing else, and I stared, mesmerized, as faces missing all excess tissue, bared, rotten and decayed teeth, dripping with the sickly venom that would turn you into one of their own if they managed to get a bite, or even a dainty nibble. Not gonna happen. Get behind me, Dancer, and cover your eyes! I didn't have to tell him twice, and he moved fast, put his arms on my shoulders and peeked cautiously as I took a deep breath, then pushed out hard with my hands held together. With a rapid outpouring of energy directed by a tattoo that ran across my lower chest, I blew them the hell out of the store via the front window. Glass rained down on the street outside, shocking the passers-by, the bodies torn to ribbons as they fell to the ground, dissolving into lumps of green and brown goo, impossible to be identified as human. As we leaned forward and watched, the flesh hissed and spat, bubbling and festering before wisps of white energy steamed into the air, and all that remained was a stain on the sidewalk. I watched through magic-infused eyes as the tormented souls of those trapped inside such unholy flesh finally left their foul prisons and cried for joy as they faded into the ether and continued into their hopefully peaceful afterlife. With the bodies down and the crowds already amassing either side of the trashed exterior beginning to peer in, a man slid the door closed on a large black van and jumped into the front. "Come on, hurry up!" I grabbed Dancer by the upper arm and dragged him out into the sweltering city, humidity high and my own adrenaline levels higher. I was still in the throes of magic, dared not relinquish my hold or I'd be out of action, and we crunched over the glass and made it to the van just as it pulled away, as the zombie transporter eased out into the nightmare traffic, barging smaller vehicles out of the way. I pulled on the handle to the back door and gently opened it. Inside was nothing but bench seats and chains running along the sides, shackles hanging down where the zombies would have been held. "In you go," I said to Dancer, who turned to me in shock and shook his head. "No bloody way, are you nuts? It's a lead and it's all we have. In!" Before he could object further, or the driver got away, I shoved him hard and he flew into the back. I jumped in after him just as the van sped up and made an illegal turn into the bus lane, and the next thing I knew the door slammed shut and we were entombed in the back of a van that had just been sent to unload a horde of zombies on me in the middle of downtown Tokyo. As far as plans went, I'd had better, and it stank worse than Dancer after a visit to the local cemetery. Still, we had each other for company. "I hate Tokyo," moaned Dancer. "At least the locals are friendly." He just stared at me. "What, they are? Normally?" A Road to Nowhere.
"Are you mad? Let me out of here. It reeks of zombies. How can you stand it?"
Dancer was panicking. He tried to cover his face, but there was nothing he could do to take away the smell. It was overpowering and extreme in a way I'd never encountered before. But then I'd never been in the back of a van that had held at least a dozen very dead and very rotten zombies before, so there was that. "I can stand it because there's no other choice. Dancer, when we go back to the UK, and I mean when, not if, then you're going to be an important man, I don't doubt it, and what better way to make your entrance than..."
"What the hell are you talking about?"
He was genuinely confused, and for me that was a very good sign. Dancer has never been the type to push himself forward, I always on the end game of gaining position and power, and to my mind that made him the perfect candidate. The council will want you, maybe, to take Ricker's place, or the position he used to hold, at any rate. Certainly to help a new head now that Grandma is out of the running. He stared at me blankly, really not getting it. Look, I said, exasperated. They were playing with Ricker, putting Grandma in charge. It was a punishment. I realized, as I've been going over and over this whole sorry mess, that they did it to wind him up. But they would have given him back a head position eventually. He was too good at it. He didn't see it in his blinkered rage, but they would want him back as head of the UK Hidden Council. Now it may well be your turn, or you will be there beside someone to help and guide them.
I hadn't even considered it.
He smiled weakly, actually managing to get it to stick to his face for a second or two. Yeah, well, don't go thinking it means you can boss me about. Wouldn't dream of it. I could see his mind working, thinking of all the ways he could annoy me and get me to do things because he was in charge. I'm warning you, I'm a free agent and work for whom I please. Ricker was never my boss. Not really. Dancer raised an eyebrow. Okay, maybe he was, but I won't make the same mistake again. I settled back against the vibrating wall of the van, wondering if the council would actually put someone like Dancer in charge. I suspected they would. He was competent, efficient, had shown he could run things when Ricker had gone missing before, and most of all, he wasn't a politician. Just looked like a mortician with his short back and sides haircut, slick and dark, black suits with narrow tie, and the ever-present white shirt. Yeah, were not exactly what you would expect two powerful men adept with magic to look like, but there you go. Something felt weird, and as my vision returned to normal, I realized what it was. Payback. My stomach cramped, my vision blurred, and sickness came calling. Damn, for a moment I'd forgotten that my mastery over the magical come-down had been wiped out with my abuse of magic. The familiar sensation came over me, strong and unrelenting. Dancer watched, stoic, as I crumpled to the floor of the van and curled up tight into a ball. I would have screamed if it wouldn't have alerted those in the front to our presence, so I suffered in silence. Okay, I moaned a lot and screamed a little, but quietly. Shards of steel etched grooves in my nervous system as the payback built. I could neither think nor move as I let it do its worst. A familiar friend, telling me I could at least still harness the empty, and this was what it took, what you had to do if you wanted what we had. Dancer watched on, having already dealt with his own come-down, bad but not crippling, as he used magic in a different and less intrusive way, even though you'd think raising the dead deserved more of a punishment. It is what it is, and I welcomed the pain. It grounded me, reminded me I was just a frail human being, and that nothing of value comes without a cost. I was willing to pay it, and so much more if it meant getting to Kimiko Kochi. I'd give up almost anything, because I'd already lost more than I ever thought I would or could and hoped to go on. It was over quickly, nowhere near how it used to be, so maybe all was not lost. Perhaps I could once more be free from the suffering, and all it would take was time and focus. I hoped I would have plenty of both. There was something else going on, though, a weird gnawing at the back of my thoughts, a nagging that I was being a fool, almost as though a silent voice was laughing at me, at my ineptitude. Was this all in the mind? Was I just thinking I had to suffer because I'd pushed the boundaries of magic too far? Could be. Maybe, for now, I wanted to feel the pain just so I knew I was alive. Was I inflicting punishment on myself because I felt I deserved no better? Whatever, I'd deal with it when I could. For now, I had to focus on wherever the hell we were going. This was the first real lead since I'd arrived, and I wasn't going to let it slip away. I clambered back onto the bench, and Dancer spoke as if it had never happened.
How could he have done that to you, Spark? To all of us? He betrayed us. I thought he was a good guy in his own way, and he turns out to be the worst of all the hidden I've ever encountered.
I wish I had the answers, trust me. More than anything, I wanted for it to not be true. for there to be another explanation. But he did it. He helped have my parents killed, then he set me up when he thought I might be a problem. He dealt with a vampire to get them out of the picture, locked up a bloody fairy 50 years ago just in case he needed to use her to eradicate me in the future. All those years, and he knew he was just waiting until I was a threat in his eyes. Ugh.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?